Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, man. What is going on with you?
Oh, you know, we're right in that sweet spot between Thanksgiving and what's coming up? Christmas. That's the one.
Yes. What does that sweet spot mean to you?
Well, it just kind of, you know, you get a little taste of the holiday frivolity, and then you kind of draw back just to catch your breath.
Okay.
So that's where we are. That's where we are now. I don't know.
I thought that sweet spot meant that after the Thanksgiving affair, you set up the Christmas affair, the holiday affair, the New Year's affair, because hookers are everywhere during the holiday season.
Huh. Well, they seem
and
to be.
And the more, you know, okay. Hook, you know, you drink more during the holiday season, you start thinking more.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, you end up, you know, in places where maybe you should not be.
Yeah.
You know.
It happens.
It happens during the holidays.
Right.
You know, and you then know, they say, let it snow.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so things happen.
It's time for super blow.
Yeah, super blow holiday weekends.
Right, and right, right.
Things like that happen. I guess you could call it a sweet spot.
I don't know. I'm just throwing words around.
Yeah. But
Speaking of Thanksgiving, we just had Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was the usual suspects.
Yeah.
Who came over for our annual little brunch. And
right.
I realized looking around and going, these are my friends. Jesus.
You know, I do remember having like maybe the last like kind of rock and roll party I had. This is years ago, you know, Brent was there and, you know, a bunch of close friends and Brent kept going over and turning the music back up and somebody else kept going and turning the music down. He's like, what, who are these fucking people? I was like, it's all the people you know. He goes, yeah, but what happened to them, man? He's like, we need to get some new friends or something. Where's the strippers and the blow, you know?
Well, my thanks, I was looking around thinking to myself, this is just like Woody Allen's Broadway Danny Rose Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, who the fuck are these losers? And then, anyway, they're good people.
Sure,
they're,
sure.
They're
hardworking all
people
friends of ours.
And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
I can't remember any of their names.
Right.
And this is
but
my
you
wife's
know what they look
gig.
Like.
Yeah, it's my wife's gig. You know.
Sure. Now, go ahead.
Sorry. No, but this year, I convinced someone I know, I'm not going to mention his name because mm-hmm. he's a famous person.
Okay.
And I convinced him to come on over for the little Thanksgiving brunch, and he's declined the past few years.
Is Rodney Allen Rippy?
Just
taking
close.
A guess. Okay, all right.
Close. This guy is not a midget.
Okay, that narrows it
and
down.
He has no hair.
Okay.
And his name is not Rodney. But anyway, okay. He decided to come over. And when he came over, I was like, wow, you came over. But, you know, he brought his dog with him.
Oh, I know how much you love that, man.
And I was like, what the fuck is this about, man? I sent an invitation for you and your wife, but, you know, his wife wasn't there.
Uh-huh.
And this guy has this, like, English bred dog. It's about 8 feet high or something.
Like
this thing is huge. This thing is huge.
He brought it in your house?
Yeah, he brought it in. And
oh,
I said,
Jesus.
Well, you've got to go out in the back.
Uh-huh.
We have our nice back porch and all
yeah,
that where
yeah.
we do a lot of our entertaining and stuff like that. So I just immediately said, go to the back.
Right.
I'll get you something to eat or whatever.
But the rest of the animals.
And the whole time, I mean, he was only there for like 45 minutes to an hour because he had met my in-laws and realized he was in the wrong place.
Okay.
You know, but the whole time, I mean, this is like a gotta be a 150-pound dog. I mean, this
yeah.
dog is huge.
Yeah, I mean, just those things, just trying to
remember.
Walk
it
around.
It had some
they
kind of
not...
royal name.
Hmm.
It was some kind of royal name, but
okay.
he was holding it by the collar
mm-hmm.
so tight that he couldn't enjoy himself because you know, he thought he knew that the dog was just going to jump or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you bringing this dog here?
Yeah, your house isn't baby-proofed or anything. Certainly not dog-proof.
No, and I don't like animals.
Right.
And I don't like animal owners.
Right.
And he never mentioned this dog. The years that I've been talking to this guy, he never mentioned a dog in his life. You know?
Yeah,
and
it's a weird thing.
He comes over with his dog.
Right.
You know, so that was kind of upsetting to me, and I was disappointed in that, but... it's only like 3-4 hours, our little thing that we have.
Right, right. It's and over everyone, soon enough.
Yeah, everyone leaves, but I was disappointed in that.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
And then I gave a kid, someone brought their kid, which I don't mind, and I usually buy those Advent chocolate calendars.
Okay.
You know, for kids, I buy one. My daughter's almost 20, I still buy her one.
Oh, that's sweet.
And I buy other kids those Advent calendars. So I gave it to this kid. He's about 12 years old, and he ate the whole thing.
Wow.
All 24 days of the calendar, he ate in one sitting.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah, and I was like, and the mom was like, what are you going to do?
Really?
You know.
Huh.
Well, she was upset, but she realized...
bad parenting.
He does 2 Christmases, one with the dad and one with the mom.
Oh,
and he's
going to
be spending the Christmas with the dad, so it's like a...
Okay. You know, ruining,
he doesn't care.
Ruining
anyway, that off. Happened, and I was glad it was over. And, you know, like you say, there's a sweet spot somewhere for somebody.
Right.
I have no idea.
Now, I can't recall whether this was Thanksgiving was the opening of the fairgrounds this year or something.
Well, no, it used to be, historically.
Right.
This is when we started this whole thing.
Right.
But now, since Churchill Downs took it over, they open about 3 weeks earlier.
Oh, okay. So did you go out to the track this year?
No, I was too angry and fed up.
Right, right.
So I just stayed at home and, you know, just go.
Sometimes for an event like that, they'll have a special promotional, like a dachshund race or something. I know you're not
crazy.
They
have done that in the past.
Yeah. All right.
But no, I didn't go. I didn't.
Right on.
Because people say, well, let's just walk over to the fair. I don't want to walk.
Sure. You just have to walk back.
Yeah, I just have to walk back. In fact, speaking of walking, I had my daughter has these friends who have gone off to college and stuff, and we've stayed in touch with some of the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this email from one of the parents whose daughter's at UCLA.
Okay.
And she's getting ready to move off campus.
Mm.
She knew I'm from LA. I'm from that area.
Right.
I went to UCLA for like a semester.
And you dated some girls from UCLA.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of girls from
UCLA.
Sure.
Yeah.
Kira. Okay. Kira, man. I remember Kira.
You're lost in your revelry.
She had a 4.0.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and she was an anthropology major.
Oh, okay.
And she used to dig up things with me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
She escaped.
Oh, yeah. She was...
She found the key.
Yeah, she found the key.
To the handcuffs.
Yeah, she did something. Uh-huh. Anyway, Kira. But anyway, so I was like, you know, okay... I don't, you know, LA has changed so much. That area has changed so much. She wants to live off campus. Does she have a car? No, she doesn't have a car.
Mm.
All right, so I told her, I said, these are neighborhoods that are close to the campus where the buses go that I remember. And I detailed these 3 bus lines from this neighborhood, from Santa Monica, from the west side where I grew up, Venice, Mar Vista, all these bus. And I detailed it all out for her. I said, I hope this helps.
Mm-hmm. I was very generous of you.
Well, you know, I had nothing to do.
Sure.
Anyway, she writes me back, the mom, and says, well, she wants to stay right off campus at UCLA, and she likes to walk. And I was like, well, I'm from L.A. I didn't walk anywhere.
Right.
I don't walk anywhere. And I said, well, you know, UCLA is on the west side, so the northern... Anything north of UCLA campus is Bel Air.
Uh-huh.
She's not going to live in Bel Air.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Anything east of campus is the Holmby Hills. That's where, like, you know, Hugh Hefner lives.
Okay.
And stuff. Are you used to, you know, she's not going to live there.
Right.
And the only thing I could say is, like, well, you know, the west side of campus is basically like the west side of this campus. It's just all frats and sororities and all that.
Uh-huh.
She might find something there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But then she didn't take kindly to my joke about nobody walks in L.A. So anyway, at least I haven't heard back. Maybe she giggled. I don't know.
Oh, okay. A little chuckle.
You know? Yeah, so. All right. You know, when I try to help people.
Yeah, they're surprised because it's not expecting that coming. Yeah, yeah.
It's an occasion when I try to help people.
Right? They don't know how to handle it.
You think
you're up to something.
Yeah, I don't
know. Some ulterior motive. Well, I've had a busy week since Thanksgiving. Went to Biloxi, played a gig with Lynn Drury out there at the Ground Zero Blues Club.
Now, Biloxi, that's in Pennsylvania.
It's in Mississippi.
Oh, Mississippi.
Close.
Okay.
Close.
Okay. And it was a good gig?
It was a good gig. Yeah, yeah. It's a Morgan Freeman-owned club there. It's now having a kind of a roots nightclub in Biloxi, which is kind of a resort town, and, you know, they have a bunch of casinos there and stuff. It's a little bit of an odd fit. But,
now, does he have pictures of himself at this club?
Well, he does come on with a little video message where he says a few words before the show.
Really? That's creepy. That's kind of creepy.
And they have a lot of color photographs of different blues artists, roots artists that have played.
He quotes Shawshank Redemption.
I really was not paying a whole lot of attention.
He says, keep hope. Hope is a good thing, he says.
It wouldn't surprise me.
It might be the only thing.
Yeah. It's very possible. Anyway, so played there, then came back that night, played Len Drury's birthday gig at the Broadmoor. Over there on Broadside, it's called. That's what it's called. Yeah, by the Broad Theater.
And she's 84.
She's 83.
Oh yeah, well, yeah, yeah. It goes close.
I don't know. She's much younger than that, but anyway, that was another great gig. Had several former podcast guests on the band: John Fole, Eric Bolivar. Also had Mikey B3. He hasn't been on the podcast, and that was actually the second gig of my life I've ever played with Mikey B3. So.
And the Hanson Brothers opened, right?
They did.
That sounds like a good gig.
Only two of them. I don't know where that third one was.
The other one was in the penalty box.
Yes, I think you're right. Then let's see. Then on Monday, we had our big Loose Cattle record release show there at the former Aleister Crowley Temple in the Ninth Ward.
Aleister Crowley. Now, who is he?
He's one of those, not the Church of Satan, but some kind of, you know, it's one of those kind of mystic, new age, not new age, but, dabbled in the occult. You know, famously, Jimmy Page was a big follower of Crowley and his
writings. Never heard of him.
Mm-hmm. Esoteric writings. Mm-hmm.
So there was lots of anal going on at this gig.
Well, probably not on stage, but I who knows what was going on. And it's a sprawling property that has different spots. I didn't know anything
about this property.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't either before. We shot a video there for one of the songs off this record, and that was my first time in there. But it's
that guy from the Angry Inch.
Hedwig. Yeah. John Cameron Mitchell's house.
Yes, yeah.
Yes. And he was there, spoke to him briefly, and then he retreated up into the living quarters, not to be seen again until all the riffraff was actually it was a nice crowd. I was surprised, like, man, John Cameron Mitchell has a lot of faith that he and the guy from the band Michael Servers go way back.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I would have let those people in my house, frankly.
I heard that when you bought the ticket, you didn't know where the venue was.
Right. Yeah. We didn't want to advertise the address.
That's pretty bold.
Yeah. And, you know, it was totally, we couldn't have fit another person in there, man. Yeah, it was a total success. So that was good. Now we've had some stuff in the news since then. Oh, we also played that day. We went and played at the new WWOZ Studios, which I'd never been in before. They have a whole new build out in the Jack's Brewery building.
So now that Cerveris's show got canned on Broadway, are you going to go on tour, a lengthy tour, since he has all this free time?
You were asking about that before. There's actually some interest in us going to do some dates in Spain. I'm not sure when that is going to happen.
I could use a vacation.
I know. Yeah. You're looking for anything to happen to me to where I don't keep bothering you.
Right.
I get it. you're not alone, Manny. But yeah, it was great to be up there with the great Beth Arroyo Utterback, the general manager, and she showed us all around. They have the beautiful live performance area. It's something else, man. You see, you're there playing.
Did you mention the podcast?
Someone else mentioned the podcast. Oh. Yes, it's.
Is that someone else friendly up. Or foe?
No, they're friends. They're all. We have many friends over there at WWOZ. Okay.
Maybe you have many friends.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, you through by association, they're friendly right. towards you.
Okay.
Well, but then beyond that, we had some news. Our friend Hunter Biden got pardoned by his father. You saw that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. I think that's fine.
It's great. Yeah.
Shit, I'd be doing the same thing.
Of course. But man, I was thinking, it's going to be a good holiday season for Hunter, man. He's ready to party now.
Fuck yeah, man.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Biden's got to do what he's got to do, because if he didn't, you know, Trump would just fucking be, you know, trying to get him, you know, and stuff
yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, what you can, yeah.
So, you know, just give him immunity. And he gave him immunity all the way back, like, 15 years.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Can't
yeah.
touch him for 15.
Right, going back.
Which
going
is
back.
Good. I don't give a fuck.
Sure,
you know?
My
life's not going to change one bit.
No. Years. He didn't do anything to you.
No. He sold me some bad crack, though, I think.
Okay, but, you know, that's
that
all.
That was back in 2016.
That's all part of the game.
Yeah,
you know?
It was basically frozen Ajax.
Oh, that's no good.
Yeah, or either that, it was cottage cheese ceiling. I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
But he's a good guy, though.
Sure. It just goes along yeah. with yeah, the territory. Yeah.
And he lost a brother.
Yeah.
He lost two. Yeah, he lost two brothers.
Yeah. Mm. One in the car accident.
Oh, that's right.
I think, or that was a sister. I don't know.
Bidens are like the Kennedys,
it's tough, man. Yeah,
Jesus
yeah. They've had
Christ.
A run of bad luck for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So, yeah, he's pardoning people. And I also heard that a couple of Democratic liberal judges on some circuit court who were decided to retire. But once Trump got elected, they said, "Now we're not retiring."
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And there was some blowback from that?
Yeah, O'Connell. Uh-huh. The guy who's still alive.
He's still locking up there.
Yeah, he's still there, you know, doing the freeze.
Right.
He's upset about it.
Oh, bro.
Who gives a fuck about him? Yeah. You know, but other local news, mm-hmm. though, that deacon, Beck Hecker.
Hecker, yeah, I saw that.
93 years old. He's finally going to go to jail.
Finally pled guilty
to all that. And
child molestation.
Finally, he's going to be someone's bitch at 93.
Oh, wow.
He's going to be someone's bitch.
Wow. That's,
you know?
And
I think it's well-deserved. You know, the guy was bad, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they always think it's the priest, but no one suspects the deacon, man. The deacon. No one suspects the deacon.
It doesn't have to be either or. It can be
and
both.
And I've been hearing these stories that he used to wrestle these kids.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he wrestled them and wrestled them unconscious.
Well, I saw that. The one guy that he pled guilty to the charge. That's,
right.
Those were the particulars in the...
I wonder, so where do you think they'll send him? They're not going to send him to Angola or anything.
Maybe like Hunt.
Algiers. They'll send him to Algiers.
I don't know.
Or maybe they'll send him to the juvenile jail.
Well, let's hope not. But, you know, with the efficiency with which the criminal justice system is run in Louisiana, it's certainly possible.
Right. Let's just, you know, the guy, you know, whatever. He's a bad man, and let's hope he... Someone will fuck him up the ass.
Well, let's just
hope. There's got to be someone.
Catholic Church is putting an end to this practice of shuffling priests, and they keep saying, "Well, this is all in the past." But they've said that so many times before. Think, is it really? Is it really?
Of course not. Not really. Sheesh. No. It's still going on, man.
Oh, man.
You know. Anyway, what else is going on with you?
Well, that's about it.
You had a good holiday.
Yeah.
You had turkey.
I had the turkey. Yeah, I had food. We had some friends come over after my parents left, and we visited with them.
They don't like your parents, or your parents don't like them?
No. I mean, my parents were there for a really long time. These people didn't show up. Like, my parents showed up at 12:30 in the afternoon. These other people didn't show up till 8:30, so they were
that's a whole day.
Yeah, it was a full day.
Well, speaking of the holiday, I just want to say one last thing.
Get to our
guests. I saw one of the most disturbing things. I was driving down Orleans to my club, and, you know, everyone's in town. I think this was the Friday after Thanksgiving. I'm going down Orleans, and I'm at the red light right where the Dookie Chase restaurant is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very big tourist thing. You know, everyone loves the Dookie Chase, even though he didn't cook a thing. His wife did all the cooking. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I see these fat white tourists. There's about four of them, two men and two women, and they're doing selfies in front of the Dookie Chase sign.
Okay.
And I'm at the red light, and then one of the women, she pulls out a hand puppet of a blackface cook.
What?
Yeah, it's a blackface with a chef's hat and a chef's, like, whatever, apron or whatever. And they start taking pictures in front of the Dookie Chase sign.
Wow.
All four of them with this black hand puppet.
Okay.
And that was really disturbing.
Didn't expect that.
Yeah, I did not expect that.
Wow, no.
So I ran the red. Okay, well. Got out of there big time. But that's really, don't you think that's twisted? Why would anyone do that?
Have props. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. But it was very twisted. And I don't know where those people were from. I hope they had a good meal or something. I don't know.
Online content gag or something.
I have no idea. It's just sign of the times.
Yeah, it's getting crazy.
Yeah.
Well, can we get to our guest here?
Sure.
Excellent. This is a guy I've been aware of for a long time. I've been aware of his band, seen him from a distance. We've just kind of gotten to be around each other a little bit more recently. He's a fantastic singer, guitar player, songwriter. He's been with such bands as the Morning 40 Federation, much beloved band here in the city. Also, he has his band, The Rough Seven, more recent band, the 10-gallon tinfoil hat. He's also an author of a children's book, T. Roy's P. Rogue. And he's also the owner of BJ's Bywater Lounge, and the co-host of the Obligations at the Lounge podcast. So he's a busy guy. So we're going to get into all that and more. But without further ado, the great Mr. Ryan Scully. Welcome, Scully.
Wow, thank you. Thank you. That makes me sound like, you know.
Are you related to Vin Scully?
We're all related.
Okay. All the Scullies are related.
Yeah, they really? Trace back to some Irish village.
Oh,
There's a Scully Cross in Ireland.
Okay.
That is where we hail from. So, yes, Vin Scully, a cousin, distant cousin.
Right on.
All right.
Are you Irish on both sides?
No, German on one side.
Okay.
But pretty much 50-50.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, I know you're not from New Orleans. Tell us about where'd you grow up?
Well, I'm a Missouri guy.
Okay.
Yeah, I grew up in Warrensburg, small town outside of Kansas City.
Kansas City has a great music tradition. Charlie Parker.
Count Basie,
yeah.
But I didn't go to Kansas City too often.
Okay.
I mostly was in this little town.
Kind of a farming community?
Somewhat. It has a small university also.
Okay. Now, were your parents involved in the academic game?
No, they weren't. They owned a bar restaurant.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. Scully's?
No.
They should have. That would have
called
been a
Heroes.
Good...
Heroes?
Yes. Oh. It's still there.
That's a good name.
They still run it?
No.
And someone took it over.
Somebody did. Somebody, their partner's son. I wasn't about to stay in Warrensburg, Missouri, man.
Yeah.
Broader
horizons.
I don't know. I just needed the coast or the mountains or some shit like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty...
This is in the southern... Where in Missouri? Geographically, what south, north, and west part of Missouri?
On your way to St. Louis from Kansas City.
Okay.
There's an I-70. I don't know
if you
know.
Take a right?
Yeah, you take a right, yes.
Yeah.
Take a right at about 45 minutes from Kansas City, and you'll hit Warrensburg.
Okay.
Oh,
but we went back and forth to St. Louis and Kansas City. Grandparents were in St. Louis. And at that time, St. Louis was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool then.
And what year is this?
In the 80s.
Okay.
You know.
So would you go to St. Louis to see bands traveling as you were a teenager?
I did. Well, really where, you know, me and a friend really discovered, well, got into underground music.
How'd you do that?
In high school. Well, like most, like through an older brother.
Okay.
You know, an older brother and the older kids. And
or the deacon.
You learn all kind of things, man. Yeah.
We didn't have a deacon at my Catholic church. Okay. You know, we only had a priest. He was cool.
All right.
At least I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like we had a guest on the early on, and he was saying, you know, a priest had been inappropriate with him, but he said I really didn't mind it. He said this guy was really nice to me. He said, you know, he actually told me that I could play professional basketball.
Wow.
And
well, it's kind of like all those kids Michael Jackson, you know, was with. There had to be some of those kids were like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah, this is cool.
You know, well, the right
the
kid,
king
you
know? Of pop is right, banging right. My ass.
Okay.
I think it's cruel to tell a kid he could be a professional basketball player.
Yeah, it's just why you're telling him.
That's not nice.
No, that's
building up the false hope.
When you're doing the O face. The priest is doing the O face, okay, sure.
Well, anyway, that didn't happen to you. So,
Father Chuck, he was cool.
Shout out to Father Chuck, doing the right thing. Yeah. See, there's plenty of good priests out there.
There are,
yes,
you know, but
doing God's work, literally.
Yeah.
So you got into underground music, and they have a record store. You're sending away to the Columbia House.
So we would go. So the University of Missouri is in Columbia, Missouri.
Yes,
and we would go from Warrensburg about an hour and a half to Streetside Records in Columbia, Missouri, and they had the Blue Note too. I don't know if you ever played the Blue Note in Columbia, Missouri.
It sounds very familiar. Yeah, I think we did.
You may have, but we also went to this club, and I'm talking, I'm 15, you know, my friend's 16, can drive, and we would go to Lawrence, Kansas. Outside of Lawrence, Kansas, there was a club called The Outhouse.
Okay.
It wasn't even a club, really. It was just an old shack, a cinder block shack with electricity.
Lawrence, Kansas, famous retirement location for William Burroughs.
Yes. And KU is there.
Yes.
You know. But we would go see punk shows out there. Most notably, we saw Fugazi there several times.
Okay.
And that was that just blew my mind, you know. And I'm crowd surfing.
Yeah.
You know, I weigh like 95 pounds.
Right.
I'm fucking getting in the mosh pit with the skinheads and shit and falling down, and they're like picking me up, you know.
Okay.
And then, you know, there's also the shit where it's like, you know, there's Nazi skinheads.
Yeah.
And then there's anti-Nazi skinheads. And one of them's going one way in the pit.
Wow.
And the other one's going the other way, and it's trying to see who can make this pit, which way it's
going to
go.
Nazis are going to the right, I'm imagining.
Yes. Well played.
Thank you.
I was with the leftists.
Okay.
Yeah, I was with the leftists. News flash.
Yeah, yeah.
You had shaved your head.
I did not have a shaved head.
Okay.
No, but it was a It changed my life, you know. But I was not a musician.
You weren't playing music in the school band or anything until then?
No,
okay.
I was just a fucking clown, man.
I didn't have any real direction in life at that point?
Not really. I just was kind of trying to make people laugh.
Now, if someone would have said, Ryan, what do you want to be when you grow up at that point? What would your answer have been?
Professional basketball.
Okay, there you go.
No.
Because a priest told you that you could actually play professional basketball.
Yeah. And I was, you know, 5'2", weighed 95 pounds. No, I was, honestly, Renee, I don't fucking know. I really had a very clouded brain. I was just kind of going from one thing to the next.
You were just a kid. You didn't have to have an answer.
I'm not one of those lucky fuckers that, you know, knows that when they're 12 that they want to be something, you know.
Right.
I really envy
those
people.
Your parents encouraged this, right?
Not
to have any ambition.
The aimlessness.
my dad was away sometimes. He would disappear.
Prison?
No, crack.
90 days
crack.
Here, 90 days there.
Crack.
Crack? Oh, he was a crack fan.
And meth and He went in phases. He went, you know, he went from coke to meth to crack.
And they had meth back then?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sure.
So this was an ongoing saga, but my mom was raising four kids.
Mm, man.
But my dad was also there, but he was an addict.
He'd come in and out, yeah.
Yeah, he'd come in and out, but he was always there. They never got divorced. He'd just disappear occasionally.
Right. Spare the family.
And I was a middle child.
God, that sounds like a good idea.
You like the sound of that?
Yeah, why didn't I think of that?
Well, yeah, you missed the boat on that one.
Yeah, I guess.
It's too late now. Your kids are out of the house.
But he's cool now. He's cool.
Right on.
He's
okay,
cool now.
Okay, good.
Excellent.
And,
excellent.
And he's playing basketball.
And he's
in the senior league.
He's a pretty good basketball
player. 6 feet and under
he's
league,
fucking
right?
Good. He could dunk. He used to be able to dunk.
Really?
My dad could dunk.
Wow.
Oh.
I dunked. Once in my life.
Okay.
How tall are you?
I'm 6'1".
Oh, well, yeah.
It was at a party.
Oh.
It was at a party out front of somebody's house. I had come back from college, and everybody was, you know, shooting hoops and trying to dunk, and I just fucking hit it just right.
Wow. Nice.
You know, I just hit it, and I just felt it when I was going up. I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
And I fucking dunked it, and everybody's like, what the fuck just happened? I was like, yeah. It was like
Woody Harrelson.
And then I tried again, and then
I'll never be able to do that again.
No, it was wonderful. But we didn't have, I had no ambition to play music. I mostly loved music.
Right.
And more than that, it was like music was the, all the other fucking kids were listening to pop and didn't know what they, you know, we were listening to shit that nobody knew about.
Right.
Uh-huh. And that's really what
gave you an identity, gave you a community.
Yeah, completely, yeah.
Right.
And, you know, and that kind of, you know, even when I went into college at MU.
So you graduated from high school, went on to college.
I did make it through high school. Uh-huh. I went to college. Again, didn't know what the fuck I wanted to do. I just went to college because my parents said, you're going. And I went and...
still not playing music.
Still not playing music.
Okay.
You know, and just like for an example, I was listening to, you know, Nirvana, you know, Bleach. I had that when it came out.
Uh-huh.
And then like when I went, I was a freshman when I went to college, and that's when Nevermind came out, right?
Okay.
And I had it, and I was cranking that shit. You know, and it wasn't on the radio yet.
Right, right.
So it was one of those things.
Okay.
And like everybody's like, what the fuck is this? I was like, man, this is the shit, dude. And then, of course, it got blown up, and then he blew his head off, and then the music died.
Well, when this did get big, did people say, "Oh, Ryan's the guy"?
Yeah, yeah.
He's clued in on this.
But you were thinking that they were all posers by then, right?
Well, I just knew that they didn't fucking know anything about music.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I just was like, you guys are. You know,
now step back a little bit. How many siblings do you have?
I have one older brother, 2 years older, a younger brother, 3 years younger, and a baby sister,
all right,
6 years younger.
All right, so they're all in different time frames, different generations, listening to different things.
Well, kind of. My brother was in the new wave more.
My older brother.
Yeah. He's the one that kind of... But he's the one that gave me Jane's Addiction when it came out. He gave me... Fugazi.
Okay.
He wasn't as much into Fugazi, but I got it. And when I got it, I was like, what the fuck? Right. Yeah, big brothers are great for learning, you know, for getting into music.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like...
Didn't have one, but I've heard that a lot of people, it's a gateway for them.
You need to listen to music in their room when they're not there, you know, because they have the stereo system, and so...
Finding their drugs, you know,
When Rob is away, I'm going to go into his room and listen to fucking music.
Find the weed drawer.
Yeah, find the weed drawer.
Sure.
He also turned me on to weed, yes.
Oh, yeah. I see. I was clairvoyant.
I was smoking some weed.
So your dad turned you on to crack, and your brother turned you on to weed. It's a good balance, if you think about it.
My dad kept me from, you know, the experience with him and drugs kept me from doing drugs for a long time.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I was smoking weed and drinking, but I was like, no cocaine, never.
Right.
And then I moved to New Orleans.
So, well, let's get us from, so you graduate from college or go to college for some period
of time? I graduated.
Rare college graduate here on the Trouble Bend
podcast. My junior year, I tried to drop out.
They wouldn't
have. My parents took me out to dinner. I said, I'm dropping out. I'm going down because my friend Pete Becknell, he was from here, and I met him up there. And he dropped out and moved back home, and I started visiting him over Mardi Gras, you know. So me and my brother, my little brother, would come down and some friends every Mardi Gras for a couple years. And I came back from one Mardi Gras, and I told my parents, I said, I need to talk to you.
Yeah.
I said, I'm dropping out of school. And they said, okay. And then the next day they called me and they said, you're not dropping out of school, you know? And they were right. So I got a degree in history.
Okay. Well, that's a good degree to get, I think. My father has a degree in history and,
it's given me it means I like to read. I like reading books.
Yes, and you can contextualize life that we're in today.
Maybe when too
things,
much.
When things happen well.
Probably too much.
But, I mean, most people, they don't have that problem. They can't contextualize at all.
No, it'd be nice if more people could.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a curse.
So you're a man of letters. You come down here now. Tell us about getting established. And you're still not playing music.
So in college, there was a guy that I was living with. I was in a fraternity.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you this. I'm just being honest.
Yeah. I didn't expect that.
Because my brother was in the fraternity, and it's like, if you're going to go to MU, you could live in the dorms and not be able to drink, or you could go be in your brother's fraternity and drink.
Sure.
So I chose fraternity.
Yeah.
One of the guys in my class was a guitarist, and he was playing guitar, and he said, hey, man, can I teach you some chords so that I can practice my solos?
So you back him up?
Yeah. So I said, well, okay. I never really thought about it. You know, I honestly never thought about being able to play a fucking instrument.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
It never occurred to you.
I don't fucking know why. I just thought music was cool. And so he taught, it was Knocking on Heaven's Door. He taught me the chord progression. Uh-huh. And I was like, holy, what the fuck?
It blew your mind.
I can do this. And then from then on, and then like I wrote a song like the next day.
Right. I was going to say with Knocking on Heaven's Door, you had all the chords you need to write.
Then I wrote all the songs
from the rest of your career.
Yeah, exactly. And the first song I wrote with this buddy that I was smoking weed with was called Alcoholic.
Oh, okay.
Very first song I ever wrote was called Alcohol.
Now, what kind of hazing was going on at this fraternity? Now, what did they do to you to jump you in?
Mostly,
not just learn a song.
Mostly, it was Alpha Tau Omega was the name of the fraternity, and I can still do the whole fucking creed because they forced you to do that. Mm-hmm. They would hold a match in their hand and they'd light it. And they'd say, finish the creed before this match burns my fingers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so you're like, to bind men together and brother, based on eternal, beautiful principles, the bond is on, rise of the last against humanity, to know no north, no south, no east, no west, no man is man, to teach not morals, but foster poverty, blah, 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 or something like that. I can't do the whole thing, but it was like,
right.
They just yelled at you and tried to make you cry.
Okay.
And then they made you drink a lot.
Yeah.
And like, there was one party where they like, you had to chug a fucking pint of Mad Dog.
As fast
as you can, and they just put trash cans all over the pledge, and then everybody's just fucking taut. Just like that was the extent of it. And then like the Hell Week, which is like the last week of it, they keep you up for like 3 days straight. It's like a whole week, and then they don't let you sleep for like 3 days.
All right,
and it's all.
And then finals come, right?
Yeah. It was. It's interesting. I still keep in touch with a few of them, but you know, most of my friends are my high school friends.
Yeah.
You know, like I, you know, meet all kind of people and, but my, you know, mostly it's, you know, a handful of high school friends that I keep in touch with, except for the people that I work with locally.
Right. So you get your mind blown realizing that, oh, I can play guitar, yeah. and you start doing that all the time, I imagine. So then when you move down here, you already kind of have the idea that you're into playing music, at least...
Big time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was listening to... I was even listening to traditional jazz in Missouri and taking some lessons. It was the idea was I'm coming to New Orleans to pursue music.
Oh, all right.
And specifically like trad jazz.
Okay.
And then write songs, and I had a band, and the band came with me.
Really?
Yeah, we used to play Monaco Bob's.
Oh yeah, I remember the name.
Remember Monaco Bob's?
Where was that?
It was like under the overpass over there. It's called something else now, like off of Chapultepec, like right by the overpass.
Right. Did that become like RC Bridge Lounge?
Yes, or maybe it was.
Or
it might
place
be different.
A block away.
Citrus.
Citron.
Citron.
Yeah. It might be that place.
It was so fucking long ago.
Right. But yeah, I know where you're talking about.
I lived uptown. Okay. At Washington and Carondelet for 3 years.
Like, oh, I know that building.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I know so many people that lived in that building on Washington and Carondelet.
Yeah, I lived in the back. Upstairs in the back, and we had the whole house, you know, it was a great party house, and I worked at Commander's Palace.
Well, man, so many musicians, generations of musicians have been in that building.
No shit.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. George the Max, Damon Shea, Brendan Gallagher had a place there until he died, even though he had properties all around the city.
Yeah.
He liked living there. He liked being able to go out on that balcony in the morning.
Yes.
Oak trees.
Yeah, wow, that's cool.
You have Anshar Svad right across the street there.
Yeah, man.
Old Orthodox synagogue.
A few years later, I got in a car accident right in front of it when I didn't even live there.
Yeah.
Go figure, huh?
Well, you see, that's one of the things about New Orleans. That's why I can never leave, because every street I drive down, it's like, oh, yeah, so many memories there.
Yeah.
So many, there's ghosts on every fucking street corner for
me. Real. And, like, just coming in here, it's been so long.
Sure.
Since I've been in the...
Well. So now we've got you to New Orleans in the narrative, but it seems like it's about that time, Manny.
Well, let me ask you a question real quick. Have you ever baked a pie?
No.
No?
I've not baked a pie.
Okay.
I've been in the same room as a baking pie, though.
As someone who's actually made it and baked it?
Yes, I've been in the same room as a pie in the oven.
Oh, okay. All right, well.
Why do you ask, man?
I just want to know. Just a question, you know.
Just an inquiring mind.
Ever baked a pie?
You know, okay.
Simple.
Well, no.
Yes or no?
No, I wish I would have baked a pie.
Yeah.
Well, it's not
it's
too
very
much.
Hard
no,
to
no,
bake
I
a
feel,
pie.
I know. I
very hard.
I got an uncle that...
They say it's simple as pie, but it's not that fucking simple,
that's
man.
True. That's true.
You know?
All right.
That's very well said there.
So anyway, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say it's time for...
Yeah, we got to refill our drinks. Are you drinking or not, man? You look like you're lightweight.
I'm drinking Athletic Brewery, non-alcoholic beer. Yeah,
all right.
Very good. Kind of like that.
Yeah. All right, we'll be right back. The Troubled Nation knows the drill, and we'll be right back. You got the corkscrew.
And we're back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Coleman, back with our guest, Mr. Ryan Scully. Now, Ryan, I know you you have a podcast of your own. Mm-hmm. You've listened to a number of our podcasts. Mm-hmm. You have an appreciation for, you know, what goes into producing a podcast, the expenses involved.
Indeed.
And you know, from what you've heard of our podcast, you can just intuit that we don't have any sponsors, right? Any corporate sponsors.
Well, you don't say anything about it.
Yeah. Anyway. But we do have beloved listeners who support us. Mm-hmm. They believe in what we're doing, mm-hmm. even if we don't. And that we have, to that end, we have a couple of links, a PayPal link and a Venmo link for the young people. They want to reach out and support the podcast during this Thanksgiving season. And so we have the links to that right in the show notes of every show, as well as the Facebook posts that we do on the show. We also have a Patreon page, which takes the guesswork out of mm-hmm. Of supporting the podcast. Also, we have Trouble Men Podcast T-shirts and a link right there in the show notes. I would get on that if you want to give those for Christmas. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Cost you nothing. Helps us a lot. What else? You know, you can find my dates on either iguanas.com or the Renee Coleman Facebook page. I'll always promote my gigs on there. And that's about it for now. So let's get back to our guest, Mr. Ryan Scully.
Well, do you mind if I say anything?
Yes, no, please, please, come.
It's so important what you guys do with the local, a local podcast, you know.
Yes.
Where we, you know, a weekly local podcast, talking to people in our community,
right?
Mostly, you know.
Yeah.
Which is needs to. It's we need to support those things because, you know, there's so many other podcasts. It seems like every fucking podcast has got to be a famous person, right?
Right.
And all the guests are famous, and it's just this whole elitist world,
right?
And like having a, you know, a local podcast like yours is important. So,
well, because I think, you know, famous people have interesting stories, but people that aren't so famous have equally interesting stories and perhaps
totally.
More so.
Yeah, and you can connect with them more because it's here in New Orleans.
And, yeah. And you know, our whole maybe idea about what kind of guests, I mean, we have people that are well-known, but we have them on because we have a specific angle on them that's not going to be like the same interview they've done a million times before. It's not going to be an NPR style interview for sure.
Long form.
Yeah. And but you know, it's curated in a way. It's like, well, here's someone that you will dig.
Right.
Check it out.
Yes. And I mean, your radio voices are awesome.
Well,
I mean, Manny, you have an awesome radio voice.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's very distinct. I love the podcast. Giving Tuesday was yesterday, right?
Was that right? Okay.
I think Giving Tuesday was yesterday.
Okay. Sounds
so,
right.
So, you know.
And Dying Thursday's tomorrow.
So we are in the sweet spot, you see?
So kick down, people.
There you go.
Down.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Thank you, Scully. Well, so you get to New Orleans. Let's move a little bit faster. How do you first meet the musicians that you start playing with? How does that happen?
So I was you know, I had that gig at Monaco Bob's. I think it was like every Tuesday.
Okay. Now, how'd you get that? Just walked in and said,
well, we just had a tape, you know,
okay.
and you know how like weeknights, a lot of clubs, you know, if you come in and say, you know, and you bring 20 people, you know, and you say, can we do it weekly? And they'll say, yeah, because it's on a Tuesday and they don't have anything happening.
20 more people than they would have had otherwise.
Exactly.
Right.
So we did. I did that for years, and then we moved it. And this was a band called the Attack Family.
Okay.
And then it became Contradelic. And anyway, this all this uh-huh. weird. And we did a weekly.
What kind of music is it?
I was at one point heavily inspired by the Blues Explosion.
Oh sure, yeah, John Spencer.
Yeah, and so we had a lot of that.
Okay.
And then I got into Hank Williams, and then we started doing like a psychedelic country kind of thing. It was real kind of a
so
fusion.
You came down here and you're doing the jazz, traditional jazz. You want to do that and all that. So you're not thinking of doing Fugazi or anything like that down here.
Well, the Attack Family had some Fugazi vibes. It was loud and noisy I guess the trad jazz thing was kind of always there, and I took some lessons and wrote some songs like that, but generally the vibe has always been kind of loud and noisy.
Okay.
Yeah. Really, what happened, those bands we had weeklies.
New Orleans guys, some of the guys you brought down?
Some of the guys I brought down, then some New Orleans guys that I met here, and then fast forward to moving from uptown. I used to work at Commander's, and so
you were waiting tables there?
I was a back waiter. Food runner and then a back waiter.
Okay.
I was fucking sucked, man.
Now, what do you think about Commander's? I always feel like Commander's is a place that people that come from somewhere else, a famous person, like, oh, I know, I have to go to Commander's. And I always think, it's kind of overrated, in my opinion, you know? I mean, it has a famous name. It's a Brennan restaurant. Yeah. It can be very good, but it's also... We have so many great restaurants here. You know, I don't really respect that restaurant
because they let Dave Turgeon go there.
Well, sure.
You know, if you're going to let Dave Turgeon enter your restaurant, then you got some problems.
Yeah, I'm never going there again.
Yeah.
After hearing that.
I've never been, and I really, you know, I... fine dining to me is having a bowl of refried beans and some tortillas. That's a fine
pozole.
Dine. Yeah, some pozole. I don't need that shit.
Right. They have that there.
Anyway, moving
on. $30.
$30. So yeah.
So you moved from the Garden District to where Ninth Ward.
The situation was that at Commander's you worked four doubles in a row.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then you had 3 days off.
Oh, okay.
And so somehow I've made my way down into the Bywater, or maybe it was I went to Decatur Street, and that's where I went to Molly's and the Abbey, and it was in the 90s, late 90s. And that's where I ran across Josh Cohen and Bailey Smith and Rick Huckel. And Mike Andropont, I'm talking about the members of the Morning 40s.
Right.
And we all kind of came together there. And then I would get drunk with them and end up crashing on their couch for 3 days.
Yeah.
I mean, it would just be like, okay, I'm done with work.
Oh, right, right.
I'm done with work at Commander's. I'm going down there. It's like a fucking...
Lost weekend.
Monday. I'm going there Monday night, and then I'm coming back.
Do your double shift.
Do my double shift.
Thursday or something.
And so that was when I just remember the first time going into that neighborhood. They all lived in, the upper Ninth Ward.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, this is it.
Okay.
I don't know what it was. I just knew it right
now,
then.
Now, did they live on the Riverside or the Homicide of St. Claude?
On the Riverside.
Okay.
St. Ferdinand, Piety. There were several houses that were part of it, where we would bounce around. Of course, it was a lot blacker back then.
Sure.
It was a lot cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a lot cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
We all know that. It was just a whole different thing. It was...
Was it a lot more dangerous then? Or
oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, gunfire, open-air drug dealing on the corner, perhaps.
I never got mugged. People did. People get mugged now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I always kind of felt like...
And where are you living now?
I am in Mid-City now.
Okay.
By the Advanced Auto Parts.
On Broad?
Right off of Broad.
Oh, you're right in my name.
Yeah. That's
right by the Broad Theater.
Right there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little rental where I live with my girlfriend.
Nice.
But my ex and my kids still are on Maisant, in this house that we owned for 20 years. Right. So, and BJ's, of course, is in that neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm a lifer in that neighborhood. I got to get back over there, but I spend most of my time there. But, so met those guys.
Uh-huh.
Started writing songs with them. We had a band. I had a band with them that we called the Drunks.
Okay.
J-U-R-N-X. That's so stupid. And then there was the Morning 40 Federation, and I just joined. At first, I just started shaking maracas with them because I loved their band so much.
Yeah.
I was like, look, I don't want to step on your shit. I'll just fucking sing backups and shake maracas.
Uh-huh.
I did that for like a year, and then I picked up a guitar. And then I was like, I still don't want to step on your shit. Let's write some songs together, but we'll call it something else because I don't want to step on your shit.
Okay.
And then we went on tour, and then things happened. I just joined their band, and it was Morning 40s.
All right. Now, so had the band already existed before that?
Yes.
And they'd put out a couple of independent... they hadn't. Okay.
No, put nothing out.
Okay.
The first record was the band that we are now.
Okay, right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
And we did that, and the first record got pretty good attention. And I guess it's like 25, or that was like almost 30 years ago.
And y'all would play, I remember I would see y'all playing at like the Mermaid occasionally.
We did some Mermaid gigs, yeah.
And some other places down the Ninth Ward and all. And that was when me and Manny's kids were not, we don't have them together.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking? What?
You know, I'm saying our kids were just being born, so I wasn't getting out as much as I had been. So yeah, you guys are like
kids are a lot older than my kids.
Our daughters are about the same age.
Oh really?
Just a little, my daughter's a little bit older than yours, but my kids are a little bit older, but anyway, Manny and I are about a half a generation older than you, I think.
Right.
I'm
51.
Or a generation in New 51. Orleans time.
Oh, yeah. So you're like a decade. We're a decade older.
Yeah,
than
decade
you,
so older. Yeah, yeah.
That's like a lot, you know. Yeah. That's two presidents, you know, and that's four congresses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Four and a half. No, five. And, five congresses.
Yeah, five congresses. And two death sentences.
It's a lot. It's a lot. So anyway, but you guys are getting great attention. It's a thing a lot of young people are going to.
Yeah,
I would
hear
stories about y'all's gigs, legendary affairs.
We captured some type of zeitgeist there for a sec.
Yes.
About the late 90s, early 2000s.
And just to describe the aesthetic behind your band, I mean, Morning 40 Federation, it was an intentionally kind of drunk, funny, raucous, humorous.
Yes.
Well, I said funny. But kind of a no wave rock and roll almost, like, or no wave.
What is no wave?
Well, it's not exactly, but I mean, so no wave is where.
No wave is low tide.
It's where you
still don't understand.
You put a bunch of people that don't really know how to play their instruments, and you say make a band and write a song and perform on Friday.
That's us.
Yeah. Like, you know, Lydia Lunch, you know, Teenage Jesus and the Jerks was like the seminal no wave band.
That
Lower East Side.
That is,
you guys came out of that aesthetic.
I think Josh did learn to play the saxophone for the band.
Right.
So that is true, and he still sucks.
I think there was a snide comment made at some point. It's like, these guys are great, but the bad news is they're going to learn to play their instruments.
Yeah,
all going to be over.
Yeah. Well, none of I never got that good. So,
okay.
I try. I've tried. I'm just not.
Now,
what
does Morning 40 Federation mean?
It means it's a world in which you are forced by the Federation to drink a 40 ounce of malt liquor in the morning when you wake up.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
And there's mythology behind it too. There's like the mezzanine man comes and checks on you and makes sure that you've had your 40. You know, it's a utopian idea.
Okay.
And
so for a moment there, the name of the band was better than the band, right?
Well, there's different.
Because you were learning your instruments, and who sings in this band?
Well, the thing about the band is that from the very start, the bass lines were great. The bass lines were great, and the way Josh sang, Josh has a very distinct voice, and the way he sang counter to what really turned me on with the band when I saw them for the first time. Was the bass lines and how the way he sang over it, his phrasing, his phrasing, singing over these simple bass lines, but also simple bass lines that are not that are clever bass lines.
Right.
You know, so, it, you know, the music was good from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
It was good. And also every song was thematic. There was a thematic. It was like a show. There'd be a part in the middle of the show where they'd do Morning 40 weather. Okay. And like, and Kent would come out and be like, today the weather, you know,
right.
40 degrees Fahrenheit, that. 40 yeah. And then like visibility zero to double, and like you know, all this shit,
and zero to double,
you know, and like and then sing these like nursery rhymes about drinking, and it'd be this whole thing, and each mm-hmm. and you know, I like a thematic song, I like, you know, and they weren't all just let's get drunk, it was different twists.
Right.
They had a song called Face, which was about a malt liquor, a fake brand of malt liquor. Uh-huh. You know, it was very, very thought out. They
it was
were
the whole universe.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I was in, you know, really into it. And then I joined, and I had a little more skill in the traditional songwriting sense.
Right. Forms. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So Josh would come up with a cappella songs that he would write drunk or on his bike or drunk on his bike and then he would say come with me and he'd sing the song to me, and then I would sit with the guitar and I'd work
pick
it out
some chord changes and give it a form and
structure. Without exception he'd say that's way too traditional. we need a blue note is what he called it. And then we'd see it'd have to be skewed in some way, which I think was a good combination.
You know,
because I'm doing 1/4/5s and stuff and like, you know, some pretty basic structures, and then they say, well, let's do something different here.
Take a left turn somewhere.
Yeah. And so, you know, most of the songs are like that. And there's a few songs that I wrote, you know, the Corkscrew song, which is a pretty popular song, just me. I just wrote that, you know, and then brought it in and we rolled with it. There's a few that are like that, but almost all the other stuff is fully the whole band.
Right.
And that's why we haven't written a song in 10 years.
Because you got to get everybody in one room to flesh it out, right?
You know, it takes us so fucking long to write a song. You know, but the thing about the Morning 40s is it was a moment in time.
Sure.
You know, I don't feel necessary to write another song.
Sure. Yeah.
When was the last time the Morning 40 played?
Well, check this out. We just played over Halloween, but we're playing the Molly's at the Market 50th anniversary on December 13th, I think.
Okay.
Check it out. Molly's is having its 50th anniversary, and Morning 40s and Happy Talk Band are playing in Molly's, I guess.
Okay, nice. Well, this episode will come out the day before, so
you
don't have much time, people. I hope you listen to this episode right away and go see the Morning 40 Federation the next day at Molly's.
That's right. Go check it out. And so we play three times a year, generally.
Okay.
Mardi Gras, Jazz Fest, Halloween.
All right.
Right on.
Yeah.
That band has, you get signed to a M80 record label.
Right, yeah.
You go out and you tour nationally, I guess, for a couple of records.
Yeah, we toured. We had a Katrina record that we made, Ticonderoga, that we toured on. We toured with this band Slightly Stupid. We did some stuff with the Drive-By Truckers.
Yeah.
But, you know, we went through a bunch of road managers.
Okay.
You know, it was rough. Bernard Pierce was a road manager of ours.
Okay.
For one tour. But ultimately, the drugs and alcohol,
were the best.
They were fucking great.
Yeah.
But time marches on. They start getting married and having children.
Are knocking up women.
And you sometimes grow to hate each other.
At least for
a time period.
Sure, yeah.
So we had some rough spots where we really, you know, were on the outs with each other for certain things. And you know, if your Morning 40 fans know, we've broken up several, we've had many breakup shows where we said, this is our last show ever. It's a good strategy.
Yeah.
To get people to come out.
It's like those places that say, going out of business sale, and it's there it's like, the next year. You go back
to that
town.
It's like every classic rock band over 70 years old. They keep saying they're going to quit, and they keep coming back.
Yeah, the farewell tours.
Yeah. The Eagles, the Stones.
Hell freezes over.
Yeah, Motley Crue. Jane's Addiction, you know.
Well, we're not breaking up.
Michael Bublé.
He retired?
Yeah. He said he was. And Celine Dion. And
Sinatra keeps retiring and then coming out of retirement. Still.
Coming out of the coma.
Yeah. Coming out of the grave.
He ebbs and flows.
He's the chairman of the board. Baby.
Yeah.
Moving a little bit faster, so the band kind of runs its course. At some point, you start teaching school.
Yeah.
We don't have to do that, on that for too long.
Yeah,
but,
I was a teacher, and I started having kids.
Teaching history?
Teaching history.
That history degree.
In Orleans Parish?
I taught for 7 in St. Bernard.
Okay.
At St. Bernard Middle School.
Oh, God.
7. And then I taught 2.5 at Morris Jeff. Middle and high school.
Right.
My wife substitutes there every once in a while.
Is that right?
Yeah, she hates it.
Yeah. Teaching is the hardest job.
Well, a substitute, you're not even teaching.
That's the worst.
You know, you're screaming at people.
Oh, God. I get shivers.
Did you know that my daughter, when she was about 3-4 years old, and it was right after Katrina, and Morris Jeff was starting.
Uh-huh.
And the guy who was starting the whole thing as a new charter school or whatever lived in our neighborhood, and we volunteered because we didn't know where she was going to go to school.
Right.
We volunteered to stuff envelopes for them and stuff like that. And my daughter was on their poster.
Really?
She was the poster child for Morris Jeff.
Cool.
You know, a new school starting up, you know, blah, 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 blah. And she was going to go there, but we went to Lusher instead. But she was the poster child.
All right.
Wow. She was the poster child, and she didn't even go there.
Getting on the poster is the most important thing. You know, a friend of mine said, you know, they have these tribute shows.
Uh-huh.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you play the gig. If you get your name on the poster, that's all that really matters.
Maybe getting on the poster is what made it possible for her to get into Lusher.
No, I think it made it possible for the school to happen.
There you go. Need the star power.
The star power.
Yeah, I get
you
that.
Know?
Well, this has been great, but I want to touch on some of these things before we finish.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've done so much, after the Morning 40 Federation. You have the Rough 7 band with Rob Cambray, another former guest of ours, who now has Malavitas.
Yeah.
Great guy.
That's more just great. That's a Scully thing.
Okay.
I write those songs, and then I have Ratty Skirvix, Rob Cambray, Stu Odom, and Mike Andropont, the drummer for the Morning 40s, and that's a sort of like a gospel punk band,
right?
That's how it was originally came out, and so you know those shows are just fucking ape shit.
And you guys put out a couple of records with that band.
Yeah, a couple records, two records we have out with that. Not really writing new songs, just kind of doing the show now. You know,
whenever
we play, we just go out and just destroy.
And then this other record that you wrote, New Confusions, during the lockdown.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's like a total Ryan Scully solo.
Yeah, that's Attic. It's an Attic recording. All overdubs, played all the instruments.
And that was put out on Louis Michaud's Nouveau Electric label.
Yeah,
which Louis was on the show during lockdown. And man, talk about a guy that's got a lot of irons in the fire.
No shit. Yeah, he's got us all beat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciated them putting that out. Yeah, and I have something else I'm getting ready to release right now.
On Nouveau Electric?
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
I haven't showed it to him yet. But.
And your children's book, didn't it come out on Nouveau Electric?
Yeah, they did. They released it. And it's about the 20th anniversary of Katrina now.
Yeah.
So I'm getting ready to start pushing that book out.
Right.
I got to try to cash in.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
It's
cash in on people's misery.
Yeah,
that's what I always feel.
That's,
yeah,
that's the American way.
It's got to be worth something, you know, to somebody.
It's a great, great book. I think you can get it off of Nouveau Electric, or you can call me up. I have some copies.
Right on.
T. Royce P. Rogue. It's about, you know, I was here during Katrina, and the guy that was catty corner from us. We were on Rendon Street in a two-story, and every other house around us was single-story. So we ended up helping a lot of people.
Okay.
There was a guy that had no legs who was in, and we helped him get on a helicopter. And there was a guy catty-corner from us, T-Roy, who built a boat out of stuff that had floated up to his
scrap wood,
right? Yeah, and tires, and so I wrote a book about that and rescue and how he rescues a dog, and
nice.
Yeah, I've just been kind of really getting into that lately. You know how you make something, the creative process, and then you have it, and then you know you promote it for a week, and then you're like, okay, what's this shiny new thing I want to work on now?
Right.
So yeah, I'm trying to. I think I need to start pushing that again.
Revisit that.
I need to revisit that.
There you go.
It's much more fun to create than to promote.
Yeah,
sure.
I've been in the book business for 20 years now.
Yeah.
And I hate books.
You've yet to read one of them.
I haven't read a book in over 10 years because I'm so just, I can't stand it.
That is, there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, I have no desire to read books.
Having a music venue makes live music maybe a little less pleasurable.
Yeah, so you talk about that real briefly. You're the owner of BJ's.
Yes,
right?
Let's get into that because BJ's, it's been around for a while. How did you become the owner and manager of BJ's?
It happened, the owner, so I've been a regular there for 20 years before I owned it.
Okay.
You know, it was the first bar that I went in as a pup, and they just, the old guys there, you know, I went in like one time and they all ignored me. Two times they all ignored me. The third time they're like, Scully, what's up? You know, and they just,
you
like,
were in the club.
It was the first time I felt, you know, the dive bar culture, you
right.
know, and they, and they were so warm and loving to me. And I just, the bar meant so much to me and means so much to me now. And, it just so happened that I've been kind of going in and out of sobriety for about a decade.
Cool.
You know, yeah. So, you know, I'd taken 6 months off and then I drank for 6 months. I have almost 2 years now.
Okay.
Sober. But like,
we'll see how tomorrow goes. You wouldn't be the first person to relapse after
this
Troublemint podcast episode. Because we make it look good.
I got to call my sponsor after this. So I went in there, I guess kind of coming off of a sober spell, and to get a drink. I'm like, I'm back, guys. I'm back.
Right.
and it just so happened that the owner...
died.
No.
Okay,
no.
What happened?
But he was ready to pass it on. He's like, I knew the owner before him, and then he had it, and you know, we kind of consider ourselves stewards of the bar,
sure.
You know, not necessarily owners. And he's mostly just like, you know, I'm ready, and he's going around and he's asking, you know, regulars and bartenders there, you know,
you
want to
buy it?
You want to buy it? And everybody's like, no, fuck no. And I'm like,
and like, yeah,
I'm like,
and you were fucked up.
I said,
and you said, yeah,
fuck yes. And I cashed in my teacher retirement,
right.
I bought, and I put it into that, and
I like it. Push your chips all in.
I did, and then I, you know, for the first year I had it, it was honeymoon period, and oh man,
You were happy.
I was happy.
Because you were behind the bar instead of front of the bar,
yeah,
right?
I had to get sober because it was too.
You're getting high on your own supply.
Oh my God, yeah. It was a wild first year, tighten my shit up.
Right.
Okay.
You know, and because you know, like I said, BJ's Lounge is a very special place.
Okay.
It's a cosmically special place.
Okay.
In my mind. Some people don't understand how, you know, the dive bar, you know, the community behind it.
Right.
And that's what our podcast is about, really. It's about the, you know, local dive bars.
Personalities, the motivations, the community, as you say.
It is a community
thing. Now, where is this bar again?
Lesseps in Burgundy.
Okay. By Burgundy, Vons, you mean. Burgundy.
I mean Burgundy.
Yeah, so you go all the way, go to Poland Avenue, head towards the river, and you take a right on Burgundy.
Well, from Poland, yeah. If you go down St. Claude to Poland from uptown.
Because, I don't know, when did you buy this bar?
3 years ago, over three years.
I remember, though, the only memory I have of this place is right after Katrina, when things are starting to open up. I'm living in Austin, Texas with my wife and 9-month-old baby.
Uh-huh.
And our friend of ours is here in Orleans Parish, and she goes to BJ's and she sends us a picture of, you know how every place, you know, says do not accept checks from these people?
Uh-huh.
And she sent us a picture, and it's all these people, I don't know half of them, but the very last one was do not accept checks, do not let this person in the bar. And it's Davis Rogan.
I think that's most bars.
Probably most bars in the whole fucking city.
I recall that being there. Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
So my wife just wanted me to mention that tonight because she still has that picture, I think, somewhere.
They used to have we have a photo wall, the whole wall, you know, hundreds, maybe 1,000 photos, and there used to be one of Davis. He had left the bar in the rain and was laying on the sidewalk in the rain. And they had a photo of him. And it was like, wow. Glorious.
Yeah.
Glorious.
Yeah.
5 years ago, I was driving down Broad Street from basically the Broad Street Bridge all the way home. And there's this fucking car in front of me that has this left turn signal on for 2 miles. And I'm going, what the fuck is this guy doing? And finally, I pass it, and it's him. Like, you fucking idiot, man.
Well, okay, moving on. So now I gotta say, so BJ's, you know, a club scene in New Orleans, you know, clubs get good for a while, they develop a scene, then, you know, things change, they change hands, lose, you know, whatever, the location, you know, moves in and out. BJ's has somehow in the last 6 months to my world become like a place that used to be what the Mermaid was, then what the Circle Bar was, and then what maybe DBA was for a while.
Yeah.
A place where, and even Chickiwawa was for a while. So all those places don't really book those same kind of acts. BJ's is now the place where a band who's touring around the country, maybe even selling out rooms in other towns. Mm-hmm. You come to New Orleans, it's not like a rock and roll town. It's a New Orleans music town.
Yeah.
So you might not be able to get a booking here, but you can play BJ's.
Yeah.
And people will show up. And we were just talking before we started the podcast about a show that I saw recently there. Lorette Velvet, Dear France, the Marquis de Coconut was there. And you were saying you weren't sure that this bill would even draw people.
I had no idea.
But it filled up the room of all these, Panther Burn associated people, Alex Chilton associated people. They fucking came out of the woodwork. And it's a perfect room for that. You know, you can have a packed room of people and those kind of bands can play in front of a very appreciative crowd, but you don't have to have 500 people to make it look filled.
No, 100 is good.
So it's become one of those, like the new place, man. I've played there a bunch of times with several different groups.
I know, I've been really happy to get to know you.
Yeah, man.
And Iguanas, just period.
The Iguanas have played there.
You guys fucking rocked me, man. Like Rod Hodges on guitar.
Oh yeah.
Holy shit.
Rod's the real deal.
I'm like, I didn't know. I didn't fucking know. I just stood there last time you played there and watched him solo. Watched him solo through a song. It must have been, you know, a 3-minute solo. And I just followed the whole fucking thing like his fucking narrative, man. I was like, this guy is brilliant.
He's a great singer, songwriter.
That's cool, and I appreciate those kind words. It's
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Would you rather fuck Vanna White or Connie Chung? If you had the opportunity, which one?
Vanna.
You think Vanna?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right. I mean, nothing against Connie.
Sure.
She's just so serious.
She is serious.
You know, she's so serious.
And she's married to Maury Povich.
Vanna seems like she might be a freak.
Yeah, I think so.
But sometimes the serious ones are freaks too, though. So yeah. It's hard to say.
You can never
tell.
Well,
those Asian chicks, they're crazy going nuts, you know?
Just to throw that out there.
Who knows? I'm glad you answered that question.
Yeah, like your honesty. Yeah. Well, so now we're wrapping up our podcast, but to touch on your podcast. So, Scully, hats off to you because you started a podcast a year ago.
Yeah.
You do one about every 2 weeks, two a month.
Yeah,
and
we try.
So you just had your 1 year anniversary in October,
I think.
You've put out like 27 episodes or so.
Yes.
And that puts you in the top 10% of podcasts worldwide because most people who I tell them about my podcast and they go, oh, really? I have a podcast. I go, what's yours? And they tell me the name and I look it up and they have like two or three episodes.
Yeah.
So those are the people that are in the lower 90 or 95 percent of the thing.
No, we're going to keep going. I think Jeff Treffinger is coming on tomorrow.
Jeff's a great guest.
We're talking about the Stop the Lock.
Yeah. He was telling about something he said he's been fighting against for 20-something years.
So
they want to put this lock down between the upper and the lower ninth ward that's going to eat up some tremendous amount acres of the upper ninth.
It's going to be brutal if they can do it.
It's a nightmare.
So check out the next episode of Obligations at the Lounge if you want to hear more about that. You know, that's a local thing. If they do that shit, it's going to be pile driving all fucking day.
And it's probably the Corps of Engineers who, you know, they have a great track record here.
Oh my God. Mr. Go, yeah. Well done. Well done.
Yeah. No, it'll be that. It'll take 10 times longer. It'll be awful. Kudos to you because, you know, the way you have a podcast is you have to make episodes.
That's right.
Yes.
You got to do it.
There you go. Well, thank you, man. Thanks for being here. I think we're at the end of this.
It seems like a podcast.
Yeah.
Scully, you know, we could have talked to you for hours, but, you know, people.
But we don't want to.
Manny has to
come on,
go to work
Manny,
tomorrow.
Come on, man.
Well,
thanks for being here.
Yeah, Scully, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Let me give you the ceremonial presentation of the Troubled Men Podcast stickers.
Wow.
And as always on the Troubled Men Podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But you know what? The struggle continues. Good night.
Good night.
I have enough problems without my drug. I am.